Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Premature births are contributing to about 1 million deaths per year worldwide, and complications of childbirth contribute about another 750,000. Today's topic is going to be premature birth, and our guests are Dr. Matt Hirschfeld. He is a board member of the March of Dimes in Alaska. He is also head of maternal child health at the Alaska Native Medical Center. Debbie Golden is in the studio with him. She is director of program services for March of Dimes. And joining us by telephone from Fairbanks is Missy Payne. Missy is a parent who recently spent 133 days in the Providence Neonatal Intensive Care Unit with an infant that was born at 25 weeks gestation. And she will be helping us understand from a family standpoint, a personal standpoint, some of the issues relating to prematurity. So welcome to each of you. It's nice to have you join us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.
I think the logical first place to start is to ask Dr. Hirschfeld to describe and define, I guess is a better word, prematurity for us. What are we talking about when we use the word prematurity?
So I think technically the number I think of when I think prematurity is 39 weeks and above. Anything underneath that is a baby who was born a little bit early, and there can be a lot of reasons that can happen. Lots of moms go into premature labor, but basically any baby born after 39 weeks is what the March of Dimes defines as a full-term baby. Underneath that, it'd be a premature baby. Functionally, at our institution, at Alaska Native Medical Center, we usually define it as 37 weeks. For the most part, 37 weeks and above, babies do pretty well. And then under 37 weeks, they often have to end up in the NICU because they don't breathe very well or they have trouble eating or anything like that. But for the most part, 39 weeks and above is considered full term.
NICU is our term for neonatal intensive care unit, by the way. We will, as physicians, have our I don't know, what's the right term for that? It's not abbreviation. It's an acronym, I guess. So I'll try to do my best to pick up on those if we slide into those a little bit. What is a late preterm infant and why might that be significant? I seem to be hearing more about that.
Those are babies who are born close to somewhere between 34 to 39 weeks. Those are considered late preterm babies. And those are interesting because in the old days, and by old days, I mean 5 to 10 years ago, we really didn't think there were too many issues with those babies. But as it turns out, there's a lot of new research coming out looking at the neurologic outcomes of babies who are born a little bit too early, 34 weeks to 39 weeks. And some of their neurologic outcomes aren't quite as good as a full-term baby, a baby who's born after 39 weeks. They're at increased risk for having some cognitive problems in school. They're at increased risk for having autism and attention deficit disorder. At the March of Dimes, we're really pushing to allow all babies to go to 39 weeks. Because they have the best outcomes. And, you know, there are some moms who that just can't happen. They go into premature labor, but preferably if there's not a medical reason to deliver before 39 weeks, we really should be trying to deliver after that point.
Okay. Let me quickly, because I forgot to remind listeners that if you would like to call in or email about any comments regarding what you hear today or any questions, there are a couple of ways to do that. And our local number in Anchorage is 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. And you want to spell that out as all one word, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, line1@alaskapublic.org. So, Debbie, this is, I'm thinking, maybe the third or fourth program over the number of years I've been doing this program that we've had March of Dimes come on, and each time they want to talk about prematurity.
Right.
Tell us about the March of Dimes and that interest.
Okay. Well, March of Dimes, as a lot of people know, started looking at polio, looking for a cure for polio, or as it turned out, a vaccine for polio, and then moved on to address birth defects, folic acid in particular, and the neural tube defects that are oftentimes prevented by preconception and early pregnancy folic acid intake. And then after a lot of success around neural tube defects and the folic pain, March of Dimes was really looking toward the next big issue to take on. And it became apparent that even though preterm birth is a really complex problem, that it's a problem that March of Dimes wanted to take on. And it wasn't going to be a quick fix, but March of Dimes decided to form partnerships with a lot of other healthcare and medical and nursing organizations across the country and now worldwide to address the issue of preterm birth. And the fact is, it does continue to be a problem. We've seen successes. We know a lot more about preterm birth than we did before, what risk factors there are for preterm birth, and what treatment there is to help reduce preterm labor and preterm birth. But it continues to be a problem. And in fact, after the March of Dimes launched its prematurity campaign is actually the title of the campaign, to reduce preterm birth, the rate went up to a high point in the year 2006. So the campaign was launched in 2003, January. 2006 saw the highest so far preterm birth rates. And now, generally, overall, we're starting to go down. The issue of late for Alaska is that March of Dimes released preterm birth report cards. And after having received an A on our report card last year, we've gone down to a B this year based on preliminary data. And we like to emphasize that that there's more to the story than just what we know so far. But based on preliminary data for 2013, it looks as if our rate has gone up, actually from 9.2% in 2012 to 10.1% based on preliminary data for 2013.
So it's 9% of all pregnancies end in a premature birth as defined by, in your definitions, we're talking less than 39 weeks, like Matt was saying?
Or? Actually, that rate is based on 37 weeks.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
Right.
So basically 1 in 10.
One in 10, right. And, you know, we were at about 1 in 11.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're at about 1 in 10. We're the nation, or excuse me, yeah, we're at about 1 in 10. The nation actually isn't doing as well as Alaska is, even considering the fact that our rate has increased. But it's still cause for concern, and not cause for alarm, but cause for concern, and really cause for us to refocus our efforts. You know, we think first what we need to do is have a closer look at the data, get some final data, and have some analysis there that fills in some of the questions that we still have.
And one of the things I realized that premature birth is a big issue in the first year of life, but it appears from the research I did that that problems related to prematurity, at least death in particular, has now overtaken all other problems in the first years of life in children, really replacing infectious diseases, which says a couple of things. One, we have gotten so good at controlling infectious diseases, which we got to be careful how we say that because there's still a problem, but that they're no longer the serious problems they used to be. So something has to jump to the head.
Exactly.
It's a huge issue. So it needs the same kind of resources and effort drawn to it that we threw at infectious diseases from the turn of the last century up until now, it sounds like. And that's kind of what you're trying to do, if I
exactly.
put this in perspective.
And there's, like, just as of recently, $75 million new dollars that March of Dimes is putting towards research and has planned a launch for a total of 5 research centers across the country, 2 of which have opened already, and I think another one is opening very soon, then with mm-hmm. 2 subsequently to come on. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of interesting research going on, and with the work March of Dimes is doing, along with the work of many other organizations, you know, we're really expecting to see within the next few years some research come out that will help us get a better handle on the preterm birth rate okay. in the U.S. and in the world.
I'd like to come back to maybe investigate who's having premature births, what are the reasons and so forth. But I want to bring Missy, if you don't mind, bring you in a little bit. So what I understand, Missy, is that you had an infant that was 25 weeks gestation with, 39, 40 weeks being expected. And why don't you tell us if what you feel comfortable telling us about your experience how it's maybe changed your frame of reference about prematurity.
Okay. So I have a 25-weeker. When he was born, he was 1 pound, 8 ounces. When they told me I was going to have to deliver him, and I wasn't in preterm labor. I had severe preeclampsia, so I had to deliver him to save my life. But when they told me I had to do that, I had no idea that an infant at 25 weeks could even survive. But I was life-flighted down to Anchorage, and I got to speak to the nurses and physicians, and they told me his chances. They told me everything, like what to expect. And, I mean, it was the best experience considering what kind of experience it was. But the first time seeing my baby, his name's Odin, and seeing how small he was, the one word that I kept saying was, he's perfect. Like, I couldn't stop saying how perfect he was. But it's changed my whole perspective on just life in general, because I've never seen someone so small fight so hard to live, and now he's thriving. We've been home 3 weeks, and he's doing wonderful.
So how long did you tell us you had spent in intensive care down here in Providence?
We were there 133 days, so 4.5 months.
And you were telling me, I was guessing that's about average, and you said maybe a little bit longer than average for that much prematurity. Is that right?
Right. So Odin's original due date was September 30th, and we left on October 28th. So we left about a month after his original due date. And whenever you have a preterm infant, they try to they give you the estimated date of discharge around the around your due date. Sometimes, you know, it's a little bit less. Sometimes it's a little bit longer. But Odin had some eye issues. He had retinopathy of prematurity. Those issues needed to be addressed before we came back to Fairbanks. So that's what kept us there a little bit longer.
And you'd had another child without any trouble, and this time you developed this preeclampsia, which we can maybe you'd tell our listeners how you understand preeclampsia, but you had not had problems with a previous pregnancy, is that right?
No, so with my previous pregnancy, I made it all the way up to 39 weeks. I did have some high blood pressure. With preeclampsia, your blood pressure starts to go up. Your kidneys start to spill protein into your urine, your liver can start to stop working. So it's just really bad. And the only way to fix preeclampsia is to deliver the baby. So it was really surprising when I became sick with preeclampsia with my second pregnancy, because it's not very common to get it if you didn't have it with a first pregnancy. So they were kind of surprised, but it just came on all of a sudden. I was fine on a Friday, and that following Monday I was really sick. So it was the best thing for both me and for Odin, was just to deliver him.
You mentioned that there were some eye problems, and I think we'll have some time to talk about some of these issues with prematures, medical issues in a minute. But what were the immediate concerns that you noticed that the physicians had for a baby of 25 weeks gestation?
So the first concern was respiratory, making sure that he was breathing, which a baby that age, of course, he wasn't breathing on his own. He was intubated on a ventilator, to which they were breathing for him, just for a few hours. I was lucky enough to get two doses of betamethasone, which is a steroid which can help the baby's lungs mature a little bit. So I did get two doses of that. So he was ventilated for just a couple hours, and then they stabilized him on a different type of respiratory support. The next thing they were concerned about was his heart rate. It was pretty low, but once they got his respiratory status fixed, then his heart rate started to fix itself.
Matt, let me bring you in now and just ask you about issues related to prematurity and what are the issues, how successful is current technology at being able to maintain support for kids at this age, and what I know you're not an neonatologist, so just generally how you think about infants at this age, the kind of problems you might anticipate, and success rates of being able to manage them successful.
Sure, 25-weekers actually do quite well, I think we've got a good example of that on the phone right now. Sounds like the baby's doing really well. But we actually resuscitate all the way down to 22 weeks now, as some places do. And, you know, as we've gotten better at managing the respiratory problems, the feeding problems, neurologic problems, eye problems, all those kind of things, these babies have really started to do quite well over the long term. Even the 22-weekers do fairly well, as long as they don't have any other complications like an infection or anything that happens at that same time. So I take care, as a pediatrician, I take care of a lot of these kids in my clinic after they go home from the NICU, and they're followed by Infant Learning Program, which is a program from the state that follows high-risk infants from the NICU, and myself and lots of other people follow these kids, and it is amazing how well they turn out for the most part.
So the children are amazingly resilient, even at 25 weeks or lower.
Yep.
One of the other issues that always I get reminded of is that when I was in training, one of my professors always said normal babies are born normally, which implies that when we have premature births, we want to be a little bit more careful about why that may have happened. In Missy's case, it happened to be with preeclampsia on her side, but there is an increased risk of problems that genetically and so forth in babies that are premature. So it does indicate the possibility of other problems.
It does, for sure. And preeclampsia is a very common reason for babies to get born premature, mm-hmm. And it really is done for the health of the mom and the baby. And there are babies out bad hearts or other abnormalities that requires them to be born early as well. And there are many medical problems that the moms need to get born early. So there's lots of medical reasons to deliver early. From the March of Dimes standpoint, we're just arguing that if there aren't medical reasons, you really should go to full term if you can. So.
And also, I guess you're trying to get the word out, there are things that you could manage better to prevent prematurity as well. So yeah. Preeclampsia, let's ask that question. It seems like, you know, again, not my area of expertise, but there have been some little bits of maybe research suggesting we're beginning to understand how to stop or prevent preeclampsia, or am I all wet about that?
Well, I think we've got better ways of treating it now.
Okay.
If it comes on severely, like in Missy's case, that oftentimes you just have to deliver the baby.
Yeah. Okay.
But we've got more medicine now to treat mom's blood pressures to try and keep the blood pressures under control. Mm-hmm. And what that results in is moms being able to carry their babies to a longer period of time.
Okay. Missy, is it your understanding you have increased risk of preeclampsia with a subsequent pregnancy, or you don't know, or is that
yes,
not true?
I've been told to not have any more babies, which is fine after experiencing, you know, the time that we did in the NICU. I'm okay with that. I think spending time with my children now is more important than having another baby and possibly losing my life or losing a baby. So,
what? I don't know, I guess maybe I don't want to read something into this, was the experience you had in the intensive care unit, it had to have been emotionally pretty stressful. I'm thinking if I had a baby that was 25 weeks and I've never had that and I'm not in intensive care as much anymore, but I'm a pediatrician, I'd be very worried on a day-to-day basis of complications, infections, and so forth. Was that much of an issue in your mind? Was it really traumatic for you?
It was. So the NICU experience is like a roller coaster. You have your ups, you have your downs. The beginning of our NICU experience was probably the hardest. It was pretty touch and go with Odin. He had some just some little problems. They call a part of the NICU, like the first 2 weeks, they call the honeymoon phase, because your baby will be doing really well, and then give the baby a couple days, and it starts to get tired, so it might start doing not as well as it was before. So it was really touch and go, and I was really emotional. And I was lucky enough that Providence offered counseling, where I could go and talk to someone if I needed to. March of Dimes also has parents there that go and volunteer, and you can talk to them, and that was really helpful. They have an office there at Providence that a parent is right as soon as you walk in, and they're always there. Someone's usually always there that you can talk to. The middle of our NICU stay was probably the easiest, and then the end, it was, once again, it was really hard. It was really emotional because we were just so ready to go home, and Odin looks like a normal full-term baby now, and we wanted to go home, but Odin still had to work on a few things. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a roller coaster of emotions.
There are only two facilities in Alaska that can take care of infants that are 25 weeks and with the kind of problems that happen. That's at ANMC and at Providence?
Just Providence, actually. ANMC takes down to 32 weeks.
Oh, okay. All right. And then Alaska Regional Hospital is a level two, so they're taking care of some smaller infants that don't have the kind of needs where you're having to do a respirator care or treat infection and so forth, which is probably what Fairbanks is doing. Is Fairbanks a level two?
Yeah, Fairbanks, ANMC, and Alaska Regional are all about level twos.
All right.
Missy had talked to me about her doctor recommending that she move away from Fairbanks to be able to receive the care that Odin would need in the future. And I thought it might be interesting to hear from her about that.
So, yeah. So my husband's in the military. So our insurance only pays for us to go to certain places, and they prefer us to go to military hospitals. So they're probably going to end up reassigning us so we can get most of our care from a military hospital, and they don't have to refer us out. And then they're not having to pay for us to travel to places so often. And that's just how the Army does things. And they'll also move us closer to family, because we don't have any family here in Alaska. So it's just their way of trying to make things easier for us, right, and also helping with costs, too. Here in Fairbanks, I mean, Odin has a few specialists that he does need to see that would require us to either travel to Anchorage or Seattle. So that's just part of the military.
So some of the consequences of prematurity, even though these babies are doing very well now, have a high likelihood of survival or a reasonable amount of survival, there are potential complications. What you've mentioned, some problems with the eyes, which is related to prematurity and the use of oxygen that needs to keep them alive. And then there's some potential respiratory issues, and they're monitored very closely about developmental outcomes from a neurologic standpoint. Those are the big issues that you're aware of, Missy?
Yeah, so the eyes, the retinopathy of prematurity, he'll be followed by an ophthalmologist for quite a while. And they told me that he'll most likely need glasses, which is fine. Like, that's a small thing. Odin also has a thyroid problem. He has congenital hypothyroidism. So he will be followed by a pediatric endocrinologist for at least 3 years. New studies are showing that they need to be on thyroid medication for at least 3 years to promote brain development. And then he does have chronic lung disease because he was on oxygen for so long. So he'll possibly need to be followed by a pulmonologist. And then, of course, physical therapy and occupational therapy, because if we don't know if these babies will be delayed now. It's as they develop, we'll have to see, are there going to be any delays? So it's good to be able to have, you know, PT and OT that can assess them every couple months and see how they're doing.
Okay. I think what I'd like to do now is I'm going to take the break that we usually have. We've kind of talked about prematurity in a general aspect and then with Missy Payne's specific experiences, but I want to kind of focus again a little bit on how much of a problem this is, especially nationally and locally, and then what are the causes, what are the things that women need to be aware of that may help prevent what's possible from leading to prematurity after we come back. So let me remind your listeners once again, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. And after this very short break, we'll continue our discussion on prematurity with Missy Payne, Debbie Golden, and Dr. Matt Hirschfeld. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight. I'm on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guests today are Dr. Matt Hirschfeld. He is a board member of the March of Dimes of Alaska. He's also the program director of the Maternal Child Health Program at the Anchorage Neighborhood, Native Medical Center. Also in the studio with Dr. Hirschfeld is Debbie Golden. She is Director of Program Services with March of Dimes. And then joining us by telephone from Fairbanks has been Missy Payne. Missy is a parent of an infant who was born at 25 weeks of gestation, and we've been listening to her describe some of her experiences with the intensive care unit at Providence, which is the only place in Alaska where you can get that level of neonatal intensive care to take care of infants with this kind of problem. You know, what I should mention really quickly, because part of what I feel like my job is in this is to explain the quality of healthcare in Alaska, but also where we may be lacking. My understanding, Matt, is that the care being done at Providence Hospital is meeting as well as any of the neonatal intensive care units across the country and what neonatal intensive care units do. Is it fair to say that?
I think it is fair to say that, and really a NICU is a big part of taking care of premature babies, but the health systems as a whole in the state of Alaska contribute to that as well. I mean, in the old days, we used to have moms delivering out in the villages and in very rural parts of Alaska, and that contributed to a very large degree to our high infant and neonatal mortality in the state. And we've been very successful in the native system telling moms that they need to deliver in a place that's appropriate for their level of pregnancy and how sick their pregnancy is. And so we don't have moms delivering in the village anymore. We have them delivering in Anchorage or in Bethel or bigger facilities where they can take care of problems. And so the neonatologists at Providence have done a great job in taking care of these babies once they're delivered. But I don't want to overlook the rural moms' contribution to this and not delivering at home, not delivering with their family system in place just because they want the healthiest baby they can get out of their delivery.
Yeah, good point. And I guess we still have a ways to go as part of the program here, part of what we're trying to say. So again, nationally, we're at about 1 in 10 delivery. Well, in Alaska, it was 1 in 10, and we're a little better than the national average. And the maps that I see in front of me is Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Oregon, and California are some of the best, with the best rate being somewhere around 8% of pregnancies ending in prematurity. How do we as a country stand with other countries in the world, both developed and non-developed, so that we get some feeling about some perspective on this percentage that we have?
The percentage that I saw today in a press release that just came out to recognize November 17th, today being World Prematurity Day, puts the U.S. in a spot that really kind of surprised me. But this article is about death, prematurity as a contributor to death in children from ages birth to age 5. And in that list, the U.S. comes up as what they describe as 141st from the worst. And I think that's a surprise, because we've heard for so long where the U.S. stands as far as the preterm birth rate overall. Our preterm birth rate overall is doesn't make us look so good as that. But like Matt was saying, we're really good at taking care of babies once they are born very early. So there's a long ways to go as far as prevention. And I think Missy talking about her experience with what was clearly a medically indicated preterm birth, it really contrasts so much with the area where we can do more around prevention. And that has to do with the elective births, the inductions that occur preterm or sort of borderline, and lifestyle factors that women can learn about to decrease their risk of having a baby born early.
All right, so let's now, if we can, if you guys don't mind, let's talk a little bit about how we can prevent, or who's at risk. What do we know about who might be at risk? What kind of factors increase the likelihood of a woman going into premature birth?
Well, one of the first risk factors is a woman who's already delivered a baby preterm. So, you know, that's kind of a red flag in terms of health care that would occur between pregnancies and during a pregnancy, and speaks to the importance of not smoking, of getting prenatal care, and of the use of progesterone potentially as a way of helping prevent a preterm birth in that subsequent pregnancy.
You have anything to add to that, Matt?
I think one of the most common reasons you see preterm births happen is the smoking thing. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to highlight that a little stronger. Mm-hmm. Smoking is a huge risk for having preterm birth. And so if we have good prenatal care so that we get moms in early to as soon as they know that they're pregnant, and have very effective treatment programs to try and get them off cigarettes, we will have a fairly decent sized effect on the preterm birth rate, no matter where that happens. It is one of the biggest risk factors for having a preterm birth.
And in some areas of the state, up to 50% of pregnant women report on the PRAM survey that they have used tobacco within 3 months prior to giving birth. Mm-hmm. So that's to about a 15% overall state rate.
Mm-hmm. Is there much difference based on socioeconomics or cultural background among those individuals in the United States, those women in the United States, for example?
I think there's a higher rate of smoking in people with lower socioeconomic status. And so in Alaska, that often we see much higher rates of smoking in rural areas than we do in the urban areas. So that would be a great place to target this smoking cessation. In addition, the rural areas also have harder trouble getting into prenatal care. And so doing good outreach, making sure that these women are checked into clinics where they're getting prenatal care, and good smoking cessation programs can really help our prenatal birth rate.
So socioeconomic status would also then be a contributing factor to prematurity. And one of the reasons might be increased use of tobacco products.
Absolutely. In addition to potentially poor nutrition, which you can
and
also
access
see.
Access to health care.
Access to health care.
Mm-hmm. Stress,
yep. Uh-huh. That's another big one that is just now getting a lot of research around is stress in moms prenatally can lead to premature birth. And it can also lead to more unhealthy babies as well. So trying to get moms good support, getting them a safe place to live, making sure that they've got enough money and food, that they're not super stressed out, will help them with their premature birth rate as well.
Mm-hmm. I remind listeners once again, I don't think I've done this well enough today, that if you have questions or comments about our discussion on prematurity, there's a couple of ways to get a hold of us. Our local number is 550-8433, our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. You can always listen to this program again by going to our website, alaskapublic.org, looking for the Line 1 link, and we have our archives easily available there, and you can refer people to listen to this program or any of the archive programs at that same place. What about multiple pregnancies, age as factors in prematurity? Would women who are younger or older have an increased risk more than one pregnancy, as well as multiple gestation pregnancies?
So there's a couple of things that play into that. So as women get older, they do have an increased risk for having kids with Down syndrome, for instance. That can lead to some birth problems as well. But also, women who have had multiple children are increased risk for having somewhat preterm birth. And so older women are increased risk for that.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the phone. I'm going to go ahead and take her. Jackie, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi, I thought you guys might want to hear the happy ending perspective. I had twins that were 2 pounds and 2 pounds, 12 ounces at Providence, 28-week gestation. My daughter was born with two severe complications. She had ureaplasma and group B strep. They had a normal routine life through school, did well, thrived, loving. They're now 21, functional, beautiful human beings, and could not have done it without the unbelievable care at Providence. Oh, my gosh, I can't say enough good. And I'm particularly happy to hear that they're offering counseling now. I think that was probably the thing that was needed, and I'm very grateful to hear that moms and dads that are going through this can go in and talk to somebody about what's going on, because it's unbelievably difficult to be a parent in that situation.
What was most stressful to you, if you think back about it, that you wished you would have had somebody that you could have talked to about?
Well, I'm kind of a captain of the ship personality. I'm self-employed. I'm successful. And basically, my pregnancy was handed over, meaning that one of them had ruptured membranes, someone else was now looking after them in control. I was not able to really touch them, or it was just that feeling of being very much no power, no control. I just had to go with the flow, and for me that was very, very hard. As the process developed, and it is a one step forward, two steps back process, so any gains are so small. You know, but as the days wore on and finally we were getting into, they were no longer intubated and, you know, I could give him a bath now and then, but that's when it started to get a little bit easier to deal with. I was an older parent and feeling guilty, extremely guilty, about the fact that pregnancy had derailed. You know, you're wondering, oh, if I had my kids at 35, this might not have happened. But I was 41, not by choice, but that's how it went. So, you know, it's just a lot of things that go into it. It's a very difficult situation, and not to mention the cost. The cost is astronomical. You come out of there with bills that are crushing. I mean, it was $687,000 for us 21 years ago, and we did have some insurance, but it didn't cover it by any means. You know, it's just a hell of a lot of stress, tremendous amount of stress. I think that the parents have it harder than the kids do in a lot of ways, even though they're the ones that are having all kinds of incredibly painful procedures done and stuff going on a daily basis.
Missy, I'm going to try to bring you back in. I would suspect that this sounds very familiar to you, and you mentioned kind of the ups and downs on a daily basis that Jackie is describing. So you had the advantage of perhaps a little bit more psychological support, and the other great difference is costs have escalated a lot. 22 years ago, $600,000 sounded like a lot. It's nothing compared to today. I don't know if you have ideas of what your numbers are today for.
I don't have all of our bills yet, but I have a few friends who had I had a friend who had a 23 weeker at Providence, and she just finished getting all of her bills, and hers were $1.9 million.
Right.
So we joke around. We're like, Odin's our $1 million baby for sure.
So this is a tremendous economic burden as well as a psychosocial burden for not only individuals but for the country. These are big numbers. End-of-life care, early care. So there's other reasons besides just the emotional aspects to try to do something about the prematurity. All right. Well, Jackie, thanks very much.
I'm happy to hear you pushing the no smoking, and, you know, a lot of women deliver, you know, they immediately test you for drugs. You know, I was completely negative, but women that are coming in, you know, that are doing drugs and then having these babies and then the government's paying for it, it's a problem that really has to be addressed because everybody ends up paying the bill.
Yep.
So, Missy, I wish you the best, and there is plenty of hope.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Jackie. Yep. So, in my mind, this brings up another issue about this prematurity. So many women, so many pregnancies are unplanned. And if they are unplanned for a woman or a family, then it's hard for women to be absolutely prepared to have childbirth. We now know it's important to have good folic acid status. We've already talked about that a little bit. And that's before you know you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. Smoking, other medications and drugs can have some effect. So it would seem to me, if I was trying to address premature birth, that we need to talk about unplanned pregnancy a little bit.
Absolutely. it really, that's a very important point to make because overall about half of births are unplanned, and babies that are unplanned, unintended births are clearly more likely to have health problems, and most likely for the exact reasons that we've talked about so far. You know, women, if they're not prepared, they may have medical conditions themselves that could have been brought under control. They, you know, might not have been taking folic acid, which could prevent a neural tube defect like spina bifida or anencephaly. There's, you know, they could have maybe in anticipation of becoming pregnant, have gotten help for any addictions they might have had, such as tobacco, alcohol, or other problems. So a lot of folks may have heard of the term preconception care, and that's really what that refers to. It refers to pregnancies being planned, women being healthy when they do become pregnant, and they'll be more likely to be healthy themselves and have a healthy birth outcome.
And have a healthy place to accept the baby once a baby's born, too. Mm-hmm. If you're planning for that, mm-hmm. your family will be ready to have that baby come into the house. Mm-hmm. That's a big topic right now nationally is trying to address the preconception care so that everyone is ready for this new life to be born into the world. One thing about Jackie's call, too, it was just a great call because it really did highlight how stressful it is to have a baby in the NICU. And that's something that we talk about costs and we talk about the healthcare on the kids and stuff, but the stress that moms and dads go through when they have a baby in the NICU is more than almost anything else out in the world. And the guilt and all those things can really add up, and trying to avoid that by having, you know, children as late as possible is a really important part of making families healthier.
As late in term as possible. Mm-hmm. You said as late as possible. I want to make
yes, as late.
You don't want
and
to be
still
too
be
old when you start having those babies.
Not 50 weeks.
That would be bad. Or too old, yeah. So what can physicians do? What can care providers do? They don't all have to be physicians. If you're seeing a mother who has some risks for prematurity or is started to have signs of labor, so what are the options that we have, and how successful are they?
Well, I think in Alaska we have a set of physicians up here and healthcare providers that are very public health oriented, and we actually have a criminalized healthcare system where as your pregnancy risk goes up, you go to a higher and higher level of care. And in Alaska, we have the highest level of cares up here. So if you have a woman who is having problems with her pregnancy, there's always some place higher to send her. So you can, if you're a family medicine physician, you can send her to an OB. If you're an OB and she's having problems, then you can send her to a maternal fetal medicine physician, which we have here in Anchorage. And I think the biggest thing is to make sure that these women are coming in for their prenatal visits and that you're asking the hard questions. So you can't just see a woman and do an ultrasound or something and say that the baby is fine. You have to ask her about smoking and drinking and how is her stress level, and is there anything we can help you with to make your stress level better, or help you get off tobacco or drinking or drugs or anything like that. Asking the hard questions, having the hard conversations, and then if any of those things are positive, getting them to a place that's appropriate where they can take care of those issues. And Alaska has all of that.
Another issue I see that's it's interesting because it's not so much something that the Alaska Native healthcare system deals with, because they already have a strict policy around not delivering babies early unless there's a medical reason. But it's kind of talking about cultural issues that bear on preterm birth. I think it's interesting how over the past many years, maybe the past 10 or 20 years, there's been a bit of a culture shift in that women used to have babies when they went into labor. There was much less of a tendency to plan deliveries or to schedule inductions. And now there's kind of this this shift that's occurred that I realize it is hard for everybody, and that is sort of the convenience factors that come in, or maybe more than convenience. Maybe a dad who works on the slope and will only be home a certain amount of time, that sort of thing. And women wanting to have their babies earlier, doctors maybe being planning to go out of town, and their patient wanting them to be the one to deliver the baby, the doctor wanting to be the one, or other healthcare provider to deliver that baby, and so really it's kind of a two-pronged deal there. when it comes to the late preterm births, and that's really the largest percentage of our preterm birth rate is the late preterms. But I just got a sense for the first time within the past year or so how physicians can feel a tremendous amount of pressure from their patients who do want to schedule a delivery earlier. And there's just, I would encourage any women listening out there to, you know, to stick it out. And there's problems associated with inducing labor that makes that birth more likely to have to be delivered by cesarean section and a number of issues. So I think it's really just a matter of joining hands around that late preterm birth issue and pregnant women and physicians deciding to wait.
What about this issue with folic acid that we've discussed a little bit? Matt, do you mind if I ask you to flesh this out a little bit more? Well, this is something that's been recognized for a while, and the recognition and public publicity, or at least informing physicians in particular about it, has led to some important improvements. You mind tell us a little bit about the folic acid story?
Sure. This goes kind of back to the nutritional things that we've been talking about a little bit before. One of the complications that can happen with babies is their spinal cord forms from a tube called the neural tube. And if you don't have enough folic acid present in the mom, that formation can be abnormal and kids can be born with spina bifida and some other complications where their spinal cord doesn't form properly. And one of the things that March of Dimes has been a supporter of for a long time is research into this area. And we found that by giving moms high doses of folic acid early on in pregnancy, you can almost eliminate this complication from pregnancy. And so Debbie was talking earlier about research that March of Dimes supports. And this is the kind of thing that we're really talking about is, What are the nutritional factors that moms can take that can help their babies be born with the best health that they can when they're born? And folic acid is a great example of that because it, by taking just this one chemical, moms have eliminated all sorts of problems with neural tube defects in babies.
And we were seeing that there's been a marked decrease in the incidence of neural tube defects in the United States. I think that's fair to say. And those were very crippling, long-term, lifelong problems in infants. And it also pointed out that, you know, maybe even ideally with perfectly good nutrition, you could still, what you thought was perfectly good nutrition, you might have some problems getting enough folic acid in some individuals.
And that's right.
So and especially so for women in the childbearing age, once they start getting into that age, they really need to be thinking about adequate nutrition. Since, again, so many pregnancies are unintended, you never know. And these neural tubes are forming in the first 30 days or so. This is before you, sometimes you know you're too far along there, although there's been some improvement in that. Missy, let me bring you in as we wrap up here a little bit. What kind of message is important for you to think the public needs to hear about prematurity?
Well, that's a tough question. I think the public needs to know. I hear women all the time say that they wish they would take their babies early, or they can't wait to have their baby, and they're not even, like, they're 30 weeks pregnant. But having a premature baby is not easy. It's probably one of the most hardest things, one of the most emotional things, and one of the most stressful things that I have ever been through. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But just keep your babies in as long as possible. That's what I think women need to know. It doesn't matter how uncomfortable you are, as long as possible.
Yeah, and I've never been pregnant, but I see a lot of pregnant women. And one of the things that's important to recognize is that the longer you keep those babies in, the more likely everything's going to go fine. And we've learned that medically. We're trying to get that information out to the public as well. It's You want to get those babies out there 39 weeks or so, and it does lead to much less significant complications, and some of those perhaps lifelong. Debbie, what do you want to make sure everybody gets out of this discussion?
Well, I guess I was thinking that I'd like for folks to know that that up to about 40% of preterm births could be eliminated with tobacco abstinence. I think I've got my numbers right there. I know that despite the fact that there's a lot about preterm birth, pretension that we don't know, we do know that women quitting tobacco, whether it be smoking tobacco, using ICMIC or smokeless tobacco, that's one of the very best things that a woman could do before she becomes pregnant to help prevent her likelihood of having preterm birth. The one other thing I wanted to mention is I just did want to say the name of the March of Dimes program that Missy was referring to. It's called NICU Family Support, and March of Dimes works in partnership with the Providence program to support families who've experienced preterm birth or are otherwise in the NICU for other reasons. We value that partnership, and just did want to make a plug for the March of Dimes NICU Family Support name.
And they are awesome people that work for the family support. They're great.
Good. Glad to hear it.
That's good to hear.
Matt, I'm going to leave the final reasons for our information you want to make sure people take away from today's program for you to say. Any other thoughts about the importance of the program today?
Yeah, I think the part I would really like to highlight is something Debbie alluded to earlier, which is the preconception care. If you are at all thinking about or have even pondered at some point having a baby, I think getting in and talking to a provider to become ready to accept that new life into your world is really important. As Thad alluded to with the folic acid, a lot of stuff happens in the first 30 days of conception. And so being ready, being healthy, being nutritionally ready, being as low stress as you can be so that you're ready to accept this baby into your family is really, really important. And it's something that'll be coming out over the next couple of weeks or next couple of years as research comes out.
Mm-hmm. And the corollary of this, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but if that's true and you're not ready, then do something to keep yourself from having an unintended pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks to everybody, especially thanks to Missy for filling in at the last minute. We appreciate you coming on the air. Debbie, thanks for your time. And Matt, as usual, thanks for very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Thad.
If you want to continue the conversation on prematurity, you can join KSK on Facebook. You can find that link at www.alaskapublic.org, where you also find the link to our Line 1 archives. And you can also let us know your thoughts or suggestions about our program at line1@alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is our chief content officer at Alaska Public Media. Monica Gokey is our web editor and engineer today's program. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.